Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Will Falk. He's a biophilic writer and lawyer. The natural world speaks, and Will's work is how he listens. He believes the intensifying destruction of the natural world is the most pressing issue confronting us today. His first book is How Dams Fall, Stories the Colorado River Told Me. I'm sorry, Will, I have to correct that. His first excellent book is How Dams Fall, Stories the Colorado River Told Me. You can follow Will's work at willfalk.org, and you can follow the Thacker Pass campaign at protectthackerpass.org, protectthackerpass.org. So first off, thank you for your work in the world, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me again, Derek. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, it is. A pleasure to speak with you, too. So what's going on? Where is Thacker Pass? What is Thacker Pass? And why are you there and what's happening?
Yeah, I'm here in northern Nevada at a place called Thacker Pass. This is traditional lands of the Paiute and Shoshone peoples. It is a beautiful mountain pass that really personifies the Great Basin landscape. So I'm actually sitting here in Thacker Pass in my car, looking out across Thacker Pass, and it's a ecotype that's called the sagebrush steppe, and it's been compared to an ocean because of the way that the hills that kind of make up this sagebrush steppe look like frozen waves with sagebrush covering them. And Thacker Pass happens to be some of the best old growth sagebrush habitat left on Earth. There are sagebrush that are surrounding me. Some of them are 3 and 4, and some of them even 5 feet tall. These old growth sage can be well over 100 years old. It also happens to be a place that is some of the best remaining habitat for the greater sage grouse. Sage grouse numbers have been decimated since the arrival of Europeans. Most estimates say that there's 97 to 99% less sage grouse in the American West today than were here before Europeans invaded the area. It's as a mountain pass, it splits two mountain ranges. There's a mountain range in the south that are called the Double H Mountains, and there's a mountain range in the north called the Montana Mountains. There regularly are pronghorn antelope that move through. In fact, just 2 mornings ago, I was sitting here in a similar conversation on the phone, and I saw some pronghorn move kind of towards the camp, and a little yearling antelope took off from her mother's side, and two other little yearling antelope followed her, and they were really playfully zigzagging across the sagebrush, and it was just a great reminder of the really beautiful life that is here. There are golden eagles that live, especially in the Montana mountains, that regularly circle over Thacker Pass. These golden eagles are very shy of humans. They do not like to be around any sort of human developments. And they're also very sacred to indigenous peoples around here. There's about 30 deer that kind of circle our camp, watching us all the time. There's a lot of new grasses coming up right now, and the graze for the deer is really good. So this beautiful place is threatened with total destruction by an open pit lithium mine. Lithium is a key ingredient in electric car batteries. And a Canadian corporation called Lithium Americas, who has an American subsidiary called Lithium Nevada, wants to blow this mountain pass up and put in an open pit mine. The mine The total disturbance area is well over 17,000 total acres. That would include a chemical processing plant, a pipeline to pipe water up from the bottom of the basin that we're in. It would include a new electrical power line and all sorts of ancillary buildings. But the mine itself would be about 5,800 total acres, and it would, as an open pit mine, it would dug 400 feet into the ground.
So okay, wait, before we go on, let's convert those numbers into something that we can also understand. You said total disturbed area. Give me that number again in acres.
17,000.
17,000, and there's 640 acres in a square mile. So that's just under 30 square miles. Is that right? Is my math right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So 6,400, 12,800 in 20 square miles. So yeah, 30 square miles. That's 5 by 6. Okay. Yeah. And then the open pit itself was how many acres?
5,800.
5,800. So that's just under 10 square miles. That's nuts. Both of those are nuts. Anyway, go ahead.
And yeah, it's even more nuts when you know you're in Thacker Pass and it's a really remote area. It's about 20 miles from the nearest town of Oravada, and Oravada as a town is like an elementary school, a community health clinic, and a Shell gas station. This is and some surrounding farms and ranches. But it's also about 65 miles north of Winnemucca, you know, the sprawling metropolis that is Winnemucca of 7,500 people. So it's really remote and it's really natural. And when you're up here, there's very little evidence of human activity comparable to just about anywhere else in the United States. So, you know, when you're thinking about those acres and you're thinking about the square miles that we just calculated, picture that in a really beautiful remote place. You know, there's really picturesque, mountains down the basin, the Santa Rosa Mountains, that are covered in snow right now. And it looks really, Thacker Pass looks like scenes from, postcards or, from the old computer monitor screensavers. It's that beautiful and that picturesque, and this mine would absolutely destroy all of that. The Bureau of Land Management. Sorry, were you gonna ask a question?
Well, I was just gonna ask whether you want to continue to talk about the nature there, or if you want to start making the transition you just did. So I should have just shut up.
It's always helpful when I lose my momentum to have a redirect. on January 15th, the Bureau of Land Management issued their what's called their final record of decision and plan of operations. That is sort of the last major federal hurdle for this mine. On January 15th, my good friend Max Wilbert and I decided that we were going to come and camp on the exact location of the mine. So where I'm speaking to you from is a place that would be part of the open pit mine. We came here with several goals. One of the first goal and the most important goal, I think, is we want to prevent any construction from disturbing Thacker Pass. You know, our plans are to confront and challenge any sort of construction equipment that comes up here. But we also wanted to help people really fall in love with this area. Most people think of Nevada as simply a desert where there is no life. And because it's just a desert where there no one else lives, it's fine to exploit it and fine to mine. Then, you know, another big goal that we've had is we really want to ask some critical questions about what so-called green energy is going to do if people like Joe Biden have their way and they're going to try and escort the United States into this, transition to so-called clean energy. Places like Thacker Pass are going to be destroyed. And these are places that are some of the last remaining places that haven't been exploited for fossil fuels or for gold or silver. And we want people to start asking critical questions about what does it mean if we're going to, change our source of energy from fossil fuels to some rare earth minerals and metals? What kind of places are going to be destroyed if we do that? And we really wanted to get people to understand that these projects really aren't green. Everybody in the environmental movement seems to understand that it's wrong to blow up a mountain for coal. But they, when you start talking about blowing up a mountain for lithium, it seems like people get really confused. And we want to draw attention to that. And we feel like this proposed Thacker Pass mine has been projected to supply a quarter of the Earth's demand for lithium. And we think that if we can get out ahead of this mine, it would be the first really major lithium mine in the United States. There are a few others operating, but this one would be massive in comparison. If we can get out and really put our foot down and really really confront this mine and wake people up to the reality of things like lithium mining and the kinds of things that go into electric car batteries, then we feel like maybe we could head off something that would really be a disaster for the natural world. So we came out in January 15th. There's been a continuous presence here ever since. It was pretty snowy and windy and cold when we first got here. It's no longer snowy here, but it's still windy and it still gets down into the 20s at night. But more and more people are learning about the camp, and more people in the local communities are really getting involved in the camp and really getting involved in the opposition to the mine. So just right now, I had to take a break from two Fort McDermott Paiute and Shoshone elders. Their names are Myron and Earl Smart, brothers. They came up and have been helping us build a windbreak around our campfire here. And the Fort McDermott Paiute Shoshone people have really are really taking a stand against this mine. The Lithium Americas and Lithium Nevada have really been trying to portray themselves as this really friendly, green, socially conscious mining outfit, as far as a mining outfit can be. And they've really been telling the public and focusing in some of their public relations stuff on how well they have consulted with the tribes and how they have worked with local residents to really tell people what this mine is going to be about and what's going to happen. And some recent things have really made that claim, have really revealed that claim to be a lie. So on March 22nd, members of the Fort Paiute or Fort McDermott Paiute and Shoshone tribe filed a petition with their tribal council. There's a mechanism within the Fort McDermott Constitution which allows tribal members to bring petitions and enact legislation over the heads of the tribal council if they get enough people to sign on to this petition. And they brought a petition that asked the tribal council, or I guess demanded the tribal council, in any sort of agreements with Lithium Americas, and also to initiate a lawsuit against the Bureau of Land Management for permitting this mine in the first place. Well, just yesterday, at a special meeting that the tribal council held, the tribal council voted unanimously to withdraw from the project engagement agreement with Lithium Nevada and to initiate a lawsuit against the Bureau of Land Management. That is a clear statement, and tribal council members, when we spoke with them yesterday, really talked about how they don't trust the Bureau of Land Management. They do not feel like they were consulted on this mine. Many of the people on the reservation, most of them, as far as I can tell, seem to have just learned about the mine in the last 4 or 5 weeks, which really, again, reveals Lithium Nevada's claims that they've done such a good job consulting with local indigenous folks as a lie. So, you know, that's kind of some really good news that's happened lately. And momentum is gathering in local folks. And I think we're kind of settling in for what could be a long, long fight here.
So I'm going to throw out a few random things. One of them is, I don't know if you know this. Do you know I lived in Carlin for a couple years?
Yeah, I heard that in the conversation you and Max had about this a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, what, hour and a half west, or I mean east? Hours east. Anyway, yeah. I'm just saying this because I think it's so fascinating, and also to show how much fortitude you had to start doing this when you did, is I remember living in Nevada. And when the sun would go down, sometimes I could literally see the mercury in the thermometer go down. It is some of the coldest temperatures I've ever experienced. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Any response about cold? Give me one anecdote about how cold it was.
There's a couple nights it got down into the single digits. I think the really painful part of it was then the wind also swung from the north and brought in like 50 mile per hour winds. So there was one night when we first got up here, the first week or two, we had this kind of conical tent with that had this, I think it was a titanium, tent pole that went through the middle. And the wind was blowing so hard against our tent in that cold weather that it bent the titanium pole, and we ended up having to just get rid of the tent at a time when it was getting to be single digits at night. So that was one of the first realizations, like, we might be in for more than we bargained for up here. But
Well, okay, so I don't know if you're going to know the answer to this, but what do pronghorn antelope do when it's that cold and it's that windy?
They were definitely not up where we were. They were down. So it's the basin that is on the east side of Thacker Pass is called the Quinn River Basin. And most of the pronghorn were all at the very bottom, in what I would imagine were the warmest parts of the Quinn River Basin. They've only recently started to, kind of come back up to, where we are now. Like we've only started to see them come back up this high in the last week or so.
They're probably thinking those crazy humans, they should be down here where it's not as cold.
I think I would have agreed with them at that time.
So before we go on to more serious stuff, one more thing. Can you please? Okay. One of the things that I am so grateful to have lived in Nevada for a while for is, can you just talk for a moment about the stars? There's nothing like the stars in the desert.
Yeah, there's only one little set of electric lights really that are visible from Thacker Pass way down at the bottom of the Quinn River Basin. So the stars are completely uninterrupted here. And it is, it's not just the stars, but it's the way that the land really cradles you up towards the sky. There are no trees in Thacker Pass. So there's nothing really that blocks your view of the sky at any time, especially if you're standing up. And so you feel like the land is pushing you up towards the stars. And with the dark skies here, you see all of them. And, you know, it's not uncommon. I've been sleeping in my car, just because it offers a little bit stronger wind protection than my tent. And, so I just kind of sit in the passenger seat every night before I go to sleep and watch the sky, and it usually takes me, you know, 20 minutes or so to fall asleep, and I try and count the shooting stars, and sometimes I get up into 30 or 40 in 20 minutes before I fall asleep, because they're just so easy to see. So the stars are incredible. The sunrises and sunsets are incredible, and the way that the wind is always blowing new clouds. So, you know, the sky really is this ever changing source of enchantment, in the desert and here at Thacker Pass. And, if we weren't trying to stop a corporation from destroying this place, I think you could make a life out of just sitting in Thacker Pass, watching the sky all day and all night.
So one more question before we get back to the actual action there, which is, and I say this because I just got this accusation yesterday or 2 days ago for writing Bright Green Lies. So Will, why do you hate nature so much, and why are you a shill for the oil companies? Obviously, if you want to shut down a 10 square mile mine that's going to disturb almost 30 square miles of beautiful desert that would make it so we can drive electric cars, obviously you're a shill for the oil companies.
Well, what
I'm really getting at is. Well, just answer however you want.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is I've been involved in fighting the fossil fuel industry, you know, for years. I've participated in blockades that have stopped pipelines and that continue to stop pipelines. I strongly oppose the fossil fuel industry. I also oppose any industry. So one of the most important things that I think people need to understand is so many people take the level of technology that we live with, or the types of technology that we live with today, for granted. And they say things like, we have to have cars. Like, if you're opposing clean energy, then you must be supporting the fossil fuel industry. And the thing is human beings do not need automobiles, especially when the extraction that's required for automobiles destroys countless of other non-human and human lives. So one thing I always like to point out is it seems really crazy how people have have really bought into this notion that human beings need automobiles when, you know, we've been Homo sapiens sapiens for 250,000 years, for all but the last 100 years and 50 years in some places, and it's still in the world in a lot of places for none of those years, have human beings had cars. So let me say that again. Human beings have existed for 250,000 years, and we got along really well. We thrived, survived, and for most of that time did not destroy wholesale destruction of the natural world. So this notion that human beings need cars is a really bad one. And I think it's wrong to destroy the homes of countless others for something that human beings don't need. I mean, if we most people, you know, it's hard for them to understand why, you know, it's wrong to kill yearling pronghorns for cars. But if let's put year old children in place of the year old antelope, and, you know, we realize, let's just say we're going to go and we're just going to murder so many babies so that we can have cars. We're murdering so many baby animals so that we can have cars. It's to me, it's just simply wrong. I will oppose any sort of extraction that is used for technologies that humans don't actually need to live perfectly healthy and happy lives. I think that another thing that people don't understand is they think that, you know, somehow, these mines, like a lithium mine, is somehow operating without the whole fossil fuel infrastructure to support it. So the Lithium Nevada's proposed, their project proposal, first of all, in order to get the lithium out of the earth, they have to use trains. Most of those trains run on fossil fuels and were created by fossil fuels. They use trains to ship in sulfuric acid, which is going to be a waste byproduct from, of all things, oil refineries. They're gonna train in this sulfuric acid that they're going to use to burn the lithium out of the earth. The mine also, by their own account, is going to use 11,300 gallons of diesel for the first phase of the project every single day. 11,300 gallons of diesel are going to be burned in Thacker Pass every single day to support that, to support the mine. And then once they get fully up and running, they're anticipating doubling that number. So the mine has to have these diesel engines in order to extract the lithium. You know, the fossil fuel, we are opposing the fossil fuel industry by opposing this mine. I think that, you know, there's all kinds of other issues too. Like if you just look at some of the ingredients in electric car batteries, lithium is a major ingredient. Well, cobalt is another major ingredient. And the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a lot of cobalt comes from, that land is being destroyed too to provide cobalt. And hopefully most listeners are aware of the horrendous labor conditions, the near or perhaps total slave-like conditions that human beings work in the Congo to provide this cobalt. These electric car batteries are drenched in blood in every step of the process. So to say that, to accuse people who oppose lithium mining or cobalt mining or any kind of mining, whether or not the materials are going to be used for solar panels or wind turbines or electric car batteries, of hating nature, is dishonest, is a lie of the worst magnitude. I don't know how you can support extraction for electric car batteries and still claim to love the natural world. I'd like to turn that back around on people and say, if you're willing to destroy the natural world to provide a few humans with electric cars, then actually you're the one that hates the natural world. And your criticism is completely dishonest.
So how are, you mentioned before that there, well, I'll just say this, how is the local support at this point?
It seems, so again, the Fort McDermitt tribe, seems overwhelmingly opposed to the mine. There is a group of ranchers and farmers, local residents that have formed a group called Thacker Pass Concerned Citizens. And they are very concerned about the way that the mine is going to affect water, the air pollution. They're very concerned about the possibility of man camps that often are associated with mines like these. Man camps come with, you know, are associated with higher rates of crime, hard drugs, more violence, and especially relevant in this area, they're associated with higher instances of missing and murdered Indigenous women. There was a Thacker Pass Concerned Citizens meeting two Tuesdays ago. There's I'm going to one tonight too, but they invited me to speak at it down at the Oravata Community Center. And at first I was a little wary because two Humboldt County sheriffs walked in and I thought maybe they were, you know, coming to kind of, they knew about the protest camp and some of the things we say, and they were coming to hear what I had to say. But they actually came and they talked about how concerned they are about the mine. They're anticipating needing to hire more police officers. They're anticipating much higher crime with the mine. And it doesn't sound like they're too thrilled about the prospect of all this new construction coming in. Yeah, there's other concerns include the sulfuric acid that they're going to first shipped by trains to Winnemucca. They're then going to put molten sulfur on diesel trucks, which when the mine is sort of fully operational, there's going to be between 100 and 200 one-way trips of diesel trucks hauling molten sulfur right through the community of Oravata, up Highway 95, up Highway 293 to the mine site. And it just so happens that the route that they will be taking on Highway 293 is where the Oravata Elementary School is, the Oravata Community Health Clinic is, and the Oravata Community Church is. So they're saying that these trucks will be running for at least 41 years, 24/7 for 41 years. You know, I don't know statistics super well, but I would imagine that the statisticians can tell us that there's going to be so many wrecks of that molten sulfur on the way from Winnemucca to the mine during those 41 years. And local folks are really concerned about that. Not just the harmful effects sulfur can have when, you know, animals, including humans, encounter that sulfur. But Highway 95 is the main thoroughfare through the area, and a sulfur spill could shut down the highway for hours, if not days. And, you know, many people depend on services in Winnemucca and need to use 95. So, you know, there's a big question is what happens if someone up on Fort McDermitt or in McDermitt, the town next to Fort McDermitt or in Oravata, needs to call an ambulance, which most of them come from Winnemucca. And, you know, there's been a sulfur spill and the ambulance either have to take the really long way around, which I think adds hours to the trip, or they have to wait out that traffic, or that spill. So yeah, local folks are opposed to the mine. they are organizing to see what they can do to resist the mine. There has already been two lawsuits filed against the Bureau of Land Management for permitting the mine. One lawsuit was filed by a local rancher and his ranching business. And that lawsuit was concerned primarily with water issues and threats to the highly endangered Lahontan cutthroat trout, which exist in streams all around Thacker Pass. A couple weeks after that, a lawsuit was filed by four regional environmental nonprofits: Western Watersheds Project, Great Basin Resource Watch, Basin and Range Watch, and Wildlands Defense. And that lawsuit focused again on water quality, but also air quality. The BLM's approval and the final environmental impact statement disregarded several of the what are called resource management plans in this area, especially for the greater sage grouse. This is the greater sage grouse habitat here is of the highest concern. It's some of the best remaining sage grouse habitat, and it is classified as a really high priority for protection. And BLM just totally disregarded that resource management plan when they permitted the mine. That's something that this second lawsuit it really, really brought out. It sounds like there could be more lawsuits coming. And so there is stiff resistance from local folks. It's been really cool to see all these different prongs of a campaign to stop this mine. You know, you have indigenous folks who are concerned about the way it will affect the land, the way it'll affect water and air. But they also have, this is a sacred place to the Fort McDermitt tribe. This is a place that has burials. There is an ancient obsidian quarry on the Double H Mountains on the south side of the mine, an obsidian quarry that we've told has been used for thousands of years by indigenous folks here. An indigenous elder came up just a couple days ago and brought with him several of the medicines that they harvest here. One of them, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, is Tosa, which grows here and has, from what I understand, something of a complex kind of aging process that then can be used as medicine. They use sagebrush for tea. They use different roots and berries that are found in Thacker Pass for medicine. There's a chalky substance here that they use for, like, as a stomach antacid or for ulcers, he was saying. There was actually an old massacre site here. The indigenous word for Thacker Pass, and again, I hope I don't mispronounce this, but it's Pihimaha, which means rotten moon in the Paiute language. And it's named Rotten Moon because there was a village up in the Montana Mountains just above Thacker Pass where there was a Paiute village and the warriors were off hunting in the basin over, and an enemy tribe came and massacred whoever was left in the village, and they strung the people's intestines across the sagebrush in this little moon-like depression where the village was, and so the place became known as Rotten Moon. And the mine, you know, would disturb that history. It, you know, there's a lot of stories and memories that are connected with this place that would really be, destroyed by the mine. So then you've also got the old guard Nevada ranchers and cowboys that are looking at how much water will be used and are seeing threats to their to their homes because this mine is going to use up so much water. So the mine is going to use, I haven't said this yet, but the mine, if it goes through, would use 2,600 acre feet of water in the first 4 or 5 years of the mine's development, and then 5,200 acre feet of water in the second phase of the mine project. They're going to be getting the water from this Oravada sub area of the Quinn River Basin, which has already, the water in this basin has already been over allocated by 30,000 acre feet. So they're going to add, they're going to pull out another 5,200 acre feet of water from the Quinn River Basin. You know, it doesn't take very long to over allocate a basin, especially in the driest state in the United States, before the water is simply gone. And, if they use up the water here, then I imagine that they're going to start looking for water somewhere else. And, the way corporations think, I would imagine they start looking up the Quinn River Basin towards the reservation, and thinking about, how they can steal water from reservation lands. You've got local ranchers and farmers really opposed to this, and you've got local indigenous folks really opposed to this, and then you've got a national network of environmentalists, especially those who are seeing through the lies of so-called green energy. I think we're building a really good base to stop this mine.
So I want to go back to something you said earlier, and I don't remember if I already mentioned this. I probably did in the interview with Max, but I want to mention it again. When you talk about all the trucks, one of my primary best memories of my time in northeastern Nevada was one time I went down into I believe it's the Ruby Valley. It's a valley just west of the Ruby Mountains. And okay. I was way down, far from any houses or anything, and I got out of the car and I took a walk down this gravel road, and then I had a pocket watch and I put it on the ground and I walked about 10 steps away, and everything was so quiet that I could literally hear the pocket watch from 10 steps. And I remember at that moment just standing there, and I could hear cows lowing from, 2 miles, 3 miles, a long ways away. And I have never in my life been at a place that had such profound silence. There was that and the stars were the two things I mainly remember, and the cold. And so if they're having all these trucks, that, even ignoring the effect on non-humans, that would, if I lived there, make me want to move. Just the moving from, well, one more thing about this, which is when I lived in Spokane, I lived about 400 yards from the interstate, and I listened to music all the time. And I didn't realize until I moved here, living in a forest, I don't listen to music hardly. I hardly ever listen to music anymore because I realized I was doing it to drown out the highway sounds. And so that would be for me, that would be a deal breaker right there. Even if I didn't care about nature, to have this wonderful place where you can literally hear a crow that's 2 miles away talking to its friend, to all of a sudden have how many trucks a day or how many trucks an hour? That would kill me.
Yeah, 200 trucks a day, 24/7 for 41 years.
And one reason I brought this up is because you said, I almost laughed out loud at this. You said that the highway they're going to use is the thoroughfare. And having lived in northeastern Nevada, I know that thoroughfare means something completely different than it does in a city. A thoroughfare in that community, I'm guessing, probably means one person drives by every hour and a half.
Yeah, it's the highway 95 is one of the main routes from northern Nevada up to Boise. So there is a lot of truck traffic. It's a little more than 1 an hour, but it is not it is not a there's not traffic on Highway 95. It is a very calm and peaceful highway as far as highways go.
So you're so lyrical and such a beautiful writer and speaker. Before we move back to Thacker Pass and the organization, we're running out of time in a minute. Can you go off just a minute on the silence like you did on the stars? I know you can.
Yeah. So, my version of the pocket watch story is, in the first couple of weeks we were here, I was out walking. I love to go walking right at dusk because the light here is just so amazing. And that's also a time when the rabbits are really active. And I was walking and this rabbit, and you know, they're big jackrabbits, jumped out from beneath a sagebrush and took off and just really startled me. But, this rabbit kind of like stopped, you know, 20 or 30 yards up the path that I was walking on and kind of turned and looked at me. And so I was, you know, kind of watching him. And, I decided to follow the rabbit, you know, for 100 yards or so. And finally the rabbit, kind of disappeared. And, I dropped down onto my hands and knees to, kind of see if I could tell which way the rabbit went, see if I could see the tracks in the snow, because there was snow on the ground then. Well, when I dropped down on my knees, the wind, I heard the wind blowing through the sagebrush. And, you know how sometimes when you just like change your your body position a little bit, the wind can take on such different sounds. Well, I dropped down and was level with the sagebrush, and I could hear, you know, the wind sounded so much different through the sagebrush branches. And so I listened for a little while. Then I went back to trying to find this rabbit's tracks. I moved to another sagebrush about 5 feet away, another big one, and the wind sounded totally different through that sagebrush. And I started thinking about how, you know, all of our voices are essentially wind that is pushed through, you know, some sort of friction pushed through our lung, through our throat, and through our, you know, through our vocal cords. And I realized that that's essentially what's going on with sagebrush. Wind is blowing through these sagebrush and it creates a voice, it creates a song. And just like you and I's voices are slightly different because of the way our bodies are made or the way our vocal cords work, each sagebrush has a different voice and sings a different song, based off the way that they grow their branches and then the way they reach towards the sun and the different traumas that they experience just in their you know, day-to-day lives. As sagebrush, a pronghorn comes and nibbles on them, or a rabbit speeding through breaks off one of their branches. And I would have never been able to hear that. I would have never been able to hear each of the sagebrush's unique voices if it wasn't for how quiet it is up here. I wouldn't have been able to hear the nuance in each voice, the subtleties in each of those songs, if there was 200 trucks hauling molten sulfur, grinding away at the silence here, every day.
Go ahead.
So yeah, that's my version of your pocket watch experience.
Oh, yours is much better. And in addition to the 200 trucks, you also have the earth moving equipment. You have the operations of the mine itself, all that stuff too. As well as, of course, all the lights, et cetera, et cetera. So we only have a couple minutes left. And how many people are at Thacker Pass now? What can people do to support Thacker Pass? And how can people, if somebody, A, lives a long ways away and can't come, how can they support Thacker Pass? And B, if they do have a couple weeks off from work, or if they have the opportunity to come stand in solidarity, is that something you would encourage? And if so, how would that work?
Yes. So first, there right now are just two of us sleeping here. There will be three this afternoon. So three of us camping here. Though Fort McDermott elders are often just coming by, stopping by. They bring us food pretty often. It's really humbling how these elders drive the 30 miles from the reservation. You know, the reservation is an impoverished place, and some of these elders come every single day to check on us. You know, and that costs money. That costs gas money. They bring food, which of course costs money. So that's kind of who's here. The biggest thing that we really need, and I'm going to start with the hardest thing that we need first. So I know that I talked about those lawsuits, and I've talked about, you know, the Fort McDermott Tribal Council pulling out of the agreements. But I think that we need to remember that time and time again, judges and the government fail to stop these projects, even when the projects break the law, even when everyone knows that people are going to get sick and are going to get killed, even when everyone knows endangered species are going to get sick and get killed from these projects. And so while we're hopeful that these lawsuits succeed, it's, in my opinion, unlikely that they will. And Thacker Pass is too beautiful of a place to leave it up to a judge in Reno or a judge in the Ninth Circuit, wherever the Ninth Circuit is, to make the right decision to stop this project. So ultimately, I think what we need to do, or what this project is going to come down to, is us blocking Highway 293 and physically stopping construction equipment from getting here. And if we're going to do that, we need enough bodies here so that when the construction equipment comes, when the police come, we've got enough people to stand in the way and slow it down for long enough to grind the project to a halt. So I know how big of a sacrifice that would be for people. I know how scary things are right now. I know how tough times are for most people financially right now. But we're getting to a place on Earth where there simply isn't very much of the natural world left. And every day that passes, more of the natural world is being destroyed. And if we don't get out of our comfort zones, if we don't learn to make really big sacrifices, we're not going to have a natural world to live in anymore. So the first thing I would ask people is to really look into their hearts and find out if they could be someone that would come up here and really commit to being here for as long as it takes to stop the mine. We could really use people that are really committed to this for the long haul. So I understand that so many people probably cannot make that kind of commitment. So if you cannot make that kind of commitment, we do need financial support. I'm not sure when this fundraiser is going to be put together, but members of the Fort McDermott tribe are putting together a fundraiser to help them get to Thacker Pass to support them while they're at Thacker Pass. And I've heard that that's going to come online. Today is Tuesday, March 30th, when I'm speaking. In the next couple of days, it should come online. So if you're hearing this, you know, a week or weeks later, look for that fundraiser. And I think that would be the best place to put your money. At protectthackerpass.org, Thacker is spelled T-H-A-C-K-E-R. We do have a donation button on our website. It's pretty prominent. You can donate money there. We will use that for supplies at camp. We will use that to help people come to camp. We will use that money to, pay for food. We'll also, we may have to use that money as a bail fund later on if people are arrested. And then finally, just getting the word out. I know that there's probably a lot of people involved in environmentalism right now. If you can get the word out in your networks, let people know what's going on. If you can talk to people that you think might be someone that would commit to this project long term, some of those, conversations person to person are some of the very best ways to kind of catalyze that kind of involvement. That's the help that we need.
Well, thanks. So we're really out of time, but is there any one last thing you want to say really quickly about Thacker Pass, the animals, the experience, or whatever?
Just that I'm deeply grateful to the land here. It's been an amazing experience. And if people come out and join us, I would imagine that the land would reward them with deep experiences too. And even if the land doesn't reward us with experiences, she deserves to be protected for her own sake.
Well, thank you so much for all of that. And thank you for your work in the world. And thank you for being on the program. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Will Falk. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.